This talk was given by Jody Hojin Kimmel Sensei at the Zen Center of New York City. Hojin Sensei is the head priest and training coordinator at Zen Mountain Monastery and co-director of the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation, please visit our website at zmm.mro.org/donate. Thanks for your support.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to those of you who are here at the temple for your first time. I see a number of you today. So today, I was looking at photos from the march and saw our Sangha members, which was so wonderful, and all the people. And one of the signs somebody was holding that said, "Embody fierce compassion. March for our lives, whole body and mind." And the other one said, "Arms are for hugging." So I wanted to look at embodiment today and use part of the, we're studying, it's called Learning Through the Body and Mind. It's a fascicle by a 12th century Zen master named Dogen. And he says this, he said, sorry, the chanting went a little fast and I wasn't quite there. To study the way with the body means to study the way with your own body. It is the study of the way using this mass of red flesh. The body comes forth from the study of the way. Everything which comes forth from the study of the way is the true human body. The entire world of the 10 directions is nothing but the true human body. The entire world of the 10 directions is nothing but the true human body. The coming and going of birth and death is the true human body. To turn this body around, abandoning the 10 unwholesome actions, keeping the 8 precepts, taking refuge in the 3 treasures, and leaving home and entering the homeless life, is the true study of the way. For this reason, it is called the true human body. What is embodiment? I think this talk kind of came out a little like a poem because of the arts retreat we had yesterday on face-to-face. It was kind of a drawing retreat mostly, but an investigation into what are we facing? What are you facing? And what is that in front of you? What do you come face to face with at that very moment? What's in front of you? What is embodiment? Emerging into this world of light and sound, skin touching skin, body slipping out of a body, a mouth feeding from the breast of a body, loneliness of being encased in a bag of skin. Mom is upset, the cat is hissing. Always a surprise to look down, see new formations becoming heavier, see odd hairs in odd places. Oh, skin crevices deepening, becoming afraid that this will end. Embodiment is wonder of mind that can grow still to encounter mind. Body that can sit to realize body. Interpenetration of what I call me and what I call paper. Interpenetration of what I call me and the air breathed. The trees outside, charcoal pencils, bowing, and being a body of sound, a voice. There are cockroach bodies, pigeon bodies, cloud bodies, sycamore bodies, woman's bodies, bodies of paint and bodies of toothpaste, brick and metal bodies. What is embodiment of this gigantic body? Where do we find the self? We think about our bodies all the time, don't we? How they look, what's their state of health, Are they aging? Are they sufficiently strong, attractive, impressive? And these questions also churn out a lot of an endless stream of thinking, feeling, and spending. Consider all the clothing, the beauty products, food products, accessories, books, equipment, therapists, health products, body workers, and so on, that make up a huge portion of economy, this body. Everything depends on the body, and without it, we're literally nothing. Transcendent concepts such as consciousness, higher self, Buddha nature, are these meaningful realities, hopeful words? And whatever they are, how could they exist independent of a body? The body matters. Yet, what is it? What is the body? We take the body completely for granted, just as we do the sky and the earth. Yet the body, like them, is much more than we know. What we think of as our body, what we feel, imagine, and dream about, what we unthinkingly assume to be it to be, isn't maybe what the body really is. The body is mysterious. It's more than the body, and our feelings about it run deeper than we could ever know. And when we assume we know what the body is, but if we take a few minutes of close and even closer examination, it produces, at least to me, even more fragmentation and uncertainty than clarity. What self is there that is not the body? Yet where is the self that possesses a body to call her own? Who, outside the body, utters the words, "My body"? Without a tongue, without a brain, I can't even utter the words. So from what perspective do we look at our body? From inside, peering out from the body's eyes? Or from the outside, as if we were looking at it in a mirror? How is it possible for the body to be external to itself? It can't be. The body must be contained in the experience of looking. So we see and call, what we call my body must be something else. Is the body the flow of its sensory experiences, seeing, hearing, tasting, smelling, tactile sensation? A closer look reveals problems there too. Where does a smell or taste occur? In the nose? In the tongue? In the things smelled or tasted? In the brain? In all at once? And what about awareness? The insubstantial, kind of apparently non-physical process through which anything we experience comes to us. Is awareness inside the body or outside it? If it's inside, how can we say my body? There is no one outside to say mine. But if awareness is outside the body, no, that can't be right. Yet awareness is foundational to our experience ourself as a person at all. Without awareness, there would be no smelling, no tasting, and no body. Reminds me of that spaghetti western. Did you ever see it? My name? Who are you? They're saying, this guy that kept going through town and like kind of getting rid of all the criminals. Who are you? Who are you? When they finally saw him, he would disappear, and then they saw him and they said, and he goes, my name is nobody. I love that line. My name is nobody. There can be flesh without awareness, but a living human body, as we understand it, is aware of being a body. So we are studying the body. We are not just making peace with our physical existence. The Buddha saw a very long time ago that we're entering into a process that lies at the heart of our spiritual life itself. He saw that while spiritual strategies of disembodiment, such as trying to turn away from the body, the emotions, sexuality, pain, may offer short-term gains in the long run, these strategies land us right back, perhaps more deeply, into the confusion and the suffering we began with. No matter what the mind thinks or wants, the body receives and the body knows. It is always and without fail in immediate direct contact with the naked non-conceptual experience we call life. In the art retreat, we were trying to embody what we were seeing in front of us and merge very directly with materials, subject, object, breath, body, and stay in that complete merging, that complete connection, completely embodied in the act. The body is that experience that precedes the overlay of concept, labeling, and judgment. The body itself is a completely non-judgmental receiver of experience. Isn't that amazing? Our body doesn't judge anything. It's just a complete non-judgmental receiver of experience. That's why we say, put your mind in zazen, in your hara. Because it's not, when you go into that place in the body, it's non-judgmental. It quiets down. It opens up that more intuitive, expansive aspect of ourself. Hope you learned about that, those who had beginning instruction, the hara, about 2 inches, yeah, good, below your navel, center of energy in the human body. It is to be entirely present to who we are and to the journey of our own becoming or unbecoming, to inhabit completely this relative reality. All that we're doing, the march, the meetings, the phones, the everything, meeting it completely with no speck of ourselves left over, nothing held back, no external observer waiting for something else or something better to happen, something better to be in every respect of our physical being, our emotions, the totality of how we act, the choices we make. Mind that can grow still to encounter mind, the vast capacity of mind, the larger mind, not the small head. Body that can sit to realize body. The Buddhist teachings on the workings of the mind is called the Abhidharma. And the Abhidharma analysis goes, this sensation is a mental event produced in consciousness when an object I call a leg activates inner sensors that awaken awareness in a particular way. Likewise, seeing, hearing, and all sense perceptions are mental events stimulated by apparently physical objects. And contemporary science agrees that all experiences, what we call reality, arise when consciousness is activated by a sense organ, so eyes of perception, seeing, meet an internal or external object, and there's consciousness. That's what we call reality, right? We assume we are experiencing the object that gave rise to the event in our consciousness. But in truth, is that the only thing we can verify in is the experience itself? However, we may be misconstruing it. The idea of a body is like this. It is an idea based on unwarranted assumptions about the coherence of our conscious experience. So in Buddhist analysis, there is no body. What there is form. It's called rupa. Some kind of illusory arising that appears to be solid and that forms a basis for experience we call physical. So, what is this body? This aggregates, these skandhas, illusory arising that appears to be solid and forms a basis for experience we call physical. But in actual fact, it's a continuous flow of momentary conscious events. Hard to grok, because we still have the idea that the body, that we have a body, and that's powerful. I mean, we do, but it may not be what we think. It isn't. I mean, how many years of study, and I'm still like, this is the body? How long I still think it's this solid, unchanging thing. Though I look down and there's odd hairs and we have bodies. On the night of his enlightenment, the story goes, the Buddha was visited by the forces of Mara. Mara is the aspect of our mind that tempts us, to allures us to go away from what we know to be true, the direction we want to go in our aspiration to see what's real and true, to experience awakening, where we go back to sleep. Mara, who was determined to stop the Buddha from achieving awakening, and most of Mara's what Mara had was a devastating display and a spectacular display of hopes and fears, and most had to do with the body, either sensual allurements or threats to bodily harm. Remember the dancing women to come, you know, he's in his meditation and suddenly the harem arrives and you know, he was just steadfast. And, you know, poof, they turned to dust. Declaring that he had his army behind him, Mara defiantly called out, "Where is your army, O Buddha?" In response, the Buddha touched the ground and said, "The earth is my witness and support." In touching the earth, the Buddha was not only calling on the earth goddess to be his protector, he was saying, the earth is my body. My body expresses earth, is produced and supported by earth, is made exclusively of earth elements. I touch the earth as my witness. I am the earth. Nothing on earth, no matter how frightening, can threaten this indestructible earth body. Even if it is broken up into a million pieces, it remains, going home to its mother, who gave birth to it, who embraces it now and will always embrace it. With this gesture of truth, belonging, and ultimate invulnerability, born of surrender to an identity with the earth, Buddha expressed his absolute fearlessness, and in doing so defeated Mara. After this, his enlightenment unfolded. So that's something we can call upon in ourselves. It's exactly true for all of us. You know, that's the Buddha on my altar. I have an earth witness Buddha because I need to remember that all the time. So I prostrate to the earth witness, and you may see me often before I talk. I always touch the earth. There's many dancers too I see come out, and they touch the stage. They touch the earth as they go before their dance. I've seen it in indigenous cultures, just making that contact with the earth. It's very powerful. Our bodies too are the earth. They rise up from her, are nurtured, fed, illuminated by her. Our bodies are in constant touch with the earth and return to the earth from which they have never parted. Our bodies are expressions of the earth's creative force. Everything that makes us human, breathing, eating, elimination, perception, feeling, language, occurs only in concert with the earth, with our great mother. No thought would ever take place without the prior existence of earth. No thought would be thinkable without air, water, fire, space, dirt. My favorite subject. Even our most abstract ideas like freedom, justice, happiness are nothing more or less than earth's urge. The thought of wind, sky, water, and light. Nothing we think or do could ever be more profound or true than these natural elements, with nothing more or less than our own bodies. We may not realize that the body is a complete non-judgmental receiver of experience. There are no boundaries in the body. The body is open, porous, sensitive, vulnerable. It is already interconnected with everything in the universe. It's gigantic. Everything flows through it. So, where does a boundary come from? How do we bind? Who binds what is never bound? There has to be someone. Some of Buddhism's earlier, more sober teachings often characterize the body as repulsive, a source of attachment. It's hard to read some of that early descriptive stuff, especially from Shantideva, going into all the yachin, phlegmy, vicky, mucky, mucus, you know, that's what they would meditate on to see what, to break through attachment, you know. There's nothing, you know, like you're looking at somebody beautiful, right? And then to go through, like, just seeing what happens actually kind of lets you release a little bit what we all turn into, right? This earth gets pretty messy. But in Mahayana thought, the body as such is asserted and celebrated. It is transfigured, transformed into something more beautiful or elevated through art and faith, into the Bodhisattva body, the Buddha body, the perfect, eternal, beautiful body hidden in the earthly body of impermanence and decay. The Buddha of the Mahayana Sutras has three bodies. I'm just going to mention them, and you could study them, and you might have heard them because we chant them in the meal. They were. I think we chanted them this morning. The Dharmakaya, which is the body of truth, measureless, all-encompassing, and perfect, beyond perception and concept. That's the Dharmakaya, the pure Dharmakaya. Unnameable, vast, ungraspable. Then there's the Sambhogakaya, which my teacher could never say. He used to say Sambhogakaya every time. It's Sambhogakaya, pure Dharmakaya, Vairocana Buddha, complete Sambhogakaya, Vairocana Buddha, enjoyment body, the purified perceived body of perfect meditation and teaching. And then Nirmanakaya, the transient historical body that appears in our world for the purpose of teaching worldly beings. So Buddha is a Nirmanakaya Buddha. In Zen teachings, it's said that the ordinary human body that is accessed in Zazen is itself beyond the human body as normally conceived. So we're not just this lump of flesh. The true body is what Dogen calls it. The true human body is far beyond the world's dust, he says. Or as Hakuin puts it in the Song of Zazen, this very body is the body of Buddha. The actual biological human body is, and we just keep discovering more and more of it every day, a marvelous and endless complex occurrence. What a mystery. You know, we were looking at this face yesterday. By the end of the retreat, it was just like, what the heck is this? This, just this. We're just like, I don't know if some of you felt it, but it just keeps, as you look and look and look at more of its makeup, it just gets more and more mysterious. And that's like anything, just even ourselves, just deep looking. It gets so mysterious, doesn't it? Several hundred years of medical science has still only scratched the surface of the body's immense functioning. Like, how does the brain regulate everything so perfectly? Adjusting to any and all sorts of unforeseen events, producing thoughts, skyscrapers, cities, social systems, poems, literary work. The heart, the lungs, cells, DNA, the enormous knowledge and complex communication and movement that seems to occur effortlessly within every human body. You know, we say be still, but do we realize? Man, this is like, there's like a whole mountainous like thing happening in here as we sit still. Blood's running and fluids, and I mean, what's be still? What's a still life? Where does that come from? Walking, running, jumping, shouting, singing, playing the guitar. There are 25,000 miles of blood vessels in the human body. 25,000 miles of blood vessels right here. Stretched out to the end, it would reach the moon. Blood flows through them ceaselessly, nurturing every organ in the body. The actual functioning of the human body is a marvel. No one manufactured it. Please, I hope we don't patent it or something. No one knows where it comes from or exactly how it's produced. And the consciousness associated with it, the consciousness capable of knowing itself, supposedly that's this precious human birth, that we're the own creature that can become conscious of itself. This is the gift, hopefully, not the curse. And about this, we haven't a clue. And how simple awareness to the body can heal it. That we actually can heal ourselves. There's a healing effect by putting our attention to the body, and no one knows why. We speculate, we write things, but we don't really know. Dogen speaks of body and mind as one word. It's not body and mind. Although he's looking at the mind, he's looking at the body, but he calls it body-mind, heart-mind, heart-body-mind. Shin is heart-mind. And the falling away of body and mind, he calls Zazen. Zazen is a body-mind practice, a process of paying attention to the body's detail and then releasing the body-mind details. So first we have to pay attention and then just let that go. Learning and practicing total embodiment. This is the chance we have in Zazen, is to really practice embodiment. That's why we don't talk in here. That's why we sit still, so we can completely embody and see how difficult it is to embody, how we constantly are separating ourself. And when we are taught Zazen, we learn how to walk in the hall, in the zendo, to take our seat. We walk carefully, paying attention to each footfall, very slowly, with our hands in a particular position, our body upright. We bow to our cushion. So all of these opportunities to embody our activity come together to live undivided. We sit down and we arrange our posture carefully. We stack our spine like coins, pull our chin back, and we fold our hands delicately into this mudra that you're doing now, this receptive. See, it's different, you know, if you were sitting there like this, you know, this is receiving right to the hara, right to that center of our body. Thumbs, tips touching, palms curved, and we find the breath and allow it to be smooth, deep in the belly, natural. Get back to our naturalness, not force ourselves, just be with what it is. And then eventually we start getting more natural. We start becoming more natural. Simply the experience of body itself is the focus. And when the awareness wanders, this is fine. It's fine. It happens. It's just as we as practitioners need to fully commit to coming back. That's practicing Zazen, practicing to feel, come back to the feeling of the body sitting and the breath moving. The breath is now. That's why we use it as a focus. It's now. If you can go to the breath, it's now and now. And we can only do one at a time, which is great. It's not complicated. You can't like and exhale at the same time you're inhaling. Just it's one or the other. And there's an uncanny magic to this simple practice. What happens? Returning awareness to the body and breath over and over and over again in the course of one sitting or many sittings for years, for decades, a lifetime. This interrupts the usual flow of our thinking profoundly, based on the assumption of a discrete self inhabiting unified body. I was remembering this magic. We used to have, Dido, my teacher, used to love to dress up in roles. And one of his roles was the forest wizard. And he would do this with the kids, and he'd turn like a koan into like a story for the kids, like Senjuin or Soul or Separated. He made up two Indian names, like Running Dew and Spirit Horse. And he used to come dressed up as this forest wizard. And so we had a big production one time, and we got dry ice, and all the kids were there, and they were all like, we kept leaving signs, like big footprints and mud, and keys to his hut, and like scraps of food laying around the ground. So we were like, oh, you know, we'd make a big deal. Oh my God, there's his foot, you know. And then like, we think he's here. So we get the dry ice going, you know, and Dido would, poof. He's a big, tall guy, 6'2". And he always wore like army fatigue kind of clothes. He loved that kind of like camping outfit all the time. But we had like a wig on him with gray hair with twigs and a white beard. And he'd come boom, boom with his boots down the center of the dining hall. And all the kids were like, oh my God, it's a forest wizard, you know. And so he presents this koan and he has the kids answer it, you know, Senjuin or Solar, or Running Doin or Solar separated. And there was one kid named Bobby Leonard who he was always raising his hand every question Dido asked. He was like, ooh, 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 and like every time. And so Dido was picking on other kids because he was just, you know, would take the show. And so he picked on Bobby and he says, Bobby, do you have a question? He says, and of course he didn't have one. He's like, show me a magic trick. And he went, okay. He said, okay, center yourself. Get your feet on the earth. And he said, now, poked him in the belly. I want you to breathe and concentrate right here, right? And he said, close your eyes, right? And with your whole being, take an inhale and an exhale. Can you do that? And Bobby's like, yeah, yeah, I could do that. So everyone gets really quiet and Bobby's centered and he goes, eyes pop open and Dido, and the forest wizard goes, that's magic. Bobby went back to his seat. Once that flow is interrupted and awareness is returned to the flow of lived experience in the present moment of being alive, a moment in which everything arises and disappears at once and seems to be both there and not there, life will feel different. The body no longer appears to be the body per se. Somehow within awareness of the process of living, the body becomes more than it is. It becomes identical with awareness, and there isn't a beginning or an end to it. After sitting, normal daily life in the body returns, but there's a lightness and an ease that comes with the feeling of having been relieved, at least temporarily, of the confinement of our small lived life in a vulnerable body. We might say we feel calmer, but the feeling, I think, is more than calm. It's the feeling of reality, of having left for at least a little while the stressful unreality of daily living and entering a larger space. This is peaceful dwelling. This is how we create peaceful dwelling. And if we practice for a lifetime, this temporary relief becomes more than temporary. The sense that the body is more than the body and your life is more than your life becomes a conviction and a calm confidence in the body itself, and therefore also in the mind. In our earth-threatened time, when we must think and care about the future well-being of the planet, it's fitting that we begin to learn and enact the truth that has always been engraved on our very skins, that body, mind, spirit, and earth are one expression, one concern, one delight. Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as meditation cushions, incense, malas, liturgical instruments, books, and more, visit the Monastery Store at monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.